Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report. On the Czech story when we come back. You know, in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says that no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. Now, that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Now, private business is carried on in gold and silver coin, but public business is conducted in commercial paper, like bonds, Federal Reserve notes, credit cards, debt, and usury. Now, in 1965, Congress said that there was no difference in the value of gold and silver coin and clad coin or currency. And you know that's true when you're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there is a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power and a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes that are due on that paper money over gold. Now, God and our founding fathers did not give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew that as a matter of law, gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for us to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and politicians take our gold and silver coin away from us, for no good reason either. They knew, and they knew full well back in 1933, that in order to subjugate a free people, they would first have to take away the people's gold and silver coin in order to take away the people's right to property and to destroy those property rights. So if we intend to regain our rights, duties, and capacities, then we're going to have to first regain our property and property rights, because property is the legal foundation for all of our liberties. So let me teach you how to do just that. That's in our business school, which is now on compact disc for adult home study. If you'd like more information about our private business school, call and order my free general law CD package first. That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and it's free of charge. And you can call and order yours right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Click on to the email and then send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about property and property rights from a case called Diefendorf versus Golay, clear back in 1932, when the state of Idaho decided to implement a state income tax. Now, you'll notice that in our founding documents, our Constitution and Bill of Rights, there's no income tax. Government was financed by imposts and expost taxes. That is, people that wanted to import and export paid the tax. That's what financed the federal government. Somebody woke up around 1913 and said, what we need is a central bank like all the nations around us. The guy's name was Paul Warburg, sent over here by the Bank of England, and the financial interests, the banking interests of Europe. And he persuaded us that this central bank over here was just the ticket, because all the big industrial nations had one. The United States ought to have one. So we adopted it. Now, at the same time you adopt a central bank, you adopt paper money. And if you're going to adopt paper money, then you've got to have a methodology whereby you can sop that paper money back out of circulation. That's called an income tax. You can't have paper money without an income tax. You can have gold and silver operating as your medium of exchange without an income tax, but you can't have paper money without it. Otherwise, you'll have runaway inflation. In fact, you'll have runaway inflation with it. You know, if you're going to have paper money, you're going to have inflation. But you can keep the ball rolling a whole lot longer if you've got this income tax, and we've had it now for about 90 years. In fact, we Americans now hold the record for fiat currency in circulation for the longest period of time in the history of mankind. Now, there's a real dubious honor. So last time I showed you that income is necessarily the product of the joint efforts of the state and recipient of the income. So it's a contract. It's a joint venture between you and the state. The state furnishes the protection necessary to enable you, the recipient, to produce, receive, and enjoy it. So it's a protection racket. And a tax thereon in the last analysis is simply a portion cut from the income and appropriated by the state as its share thereof. So it's a criminal enterprise, a protection racket, and it's done by contract. Now, the court went on to explain that much confusion of thought arises from regarding the income tax as a tax that is levied upon or attaches to property as such, irrespective of the person sought to be taxed. It is the recipient of the income that is taxed, not his property. And the vital question in each case is, has the person sought to be taxed received an income during the tax year? Now, if you're dealing in Federal Reserve notes in excess of $8,400 a year, you need to file a tax return. That's what the law requires. Federal Reserve notes are income. Insurance is income. Rent is income. And when you're dealing in commercial paper, stocks, and bonds, Federal Reserve notes, those are instruments that are derived from income. Or income is derived from those instruments. So if you're going to have income, you need to pay your income tax. But notice that there's no tax on property. So why don't we think more in terms of going back and practicing the Ten Commandments, tithing, and property in place of the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto, profit, and income tax. I mean, it's a choice that you make in life. Most people don't make the choice to exercise property and property rights because they go to public school, and the public policy of the United States is espoused through the public education system. And the public policy of the United States is income and income tax, and the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto, not the Ten Commandments, and certainly not property rights, because the first plank to the Communist Manifesto calls for the abolition of all property and property rights. So you got to choose, do I want to participate in property and property rights based upon the Ten Commandments, or do I want to participate in no property rights and equitable interests as espoused by the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto, thereby paying an income tax as opposed to paying a tithe? Now, the court went on to say the tax is upon the right or ability to produce, create, receive, and enjoy, and not on specific property. The tax does not seek to reach property or an interest in property as such. It is a burden laid upon the recipient of an income. And upon a complete survey of the field of precedent, we have reached the independent conclusion that income is not property for the purposes of taxation under the provisions of our Constitution. Property, boys and girls, isn't taxed. Income is. So what we're looking for here is a methodology whereby we can practice property and property rights independent of the Ten Planks of the Communist Manifesto and then independent of income tax and Social Security. Now, most people want Social Security. Well, if you want Social Security, then you have to pay the income tax because the two go together. Can't have one without the other. Can't have an income tax without a Social Security number. Your Social Security number is your taxpayer identification number. All right, now with that in mind, there was one more definition here that I thought we ought to cover. Remember last time we were talking about these definitions, and we talked about a chosen action, a check, and commerce. Now, remember, commerce is predicated upon profit. And commerce is strictly prohibited in the scripture because commerce, which deals with profit, deals with unjust weights and balances. So remember, we have a law that says, thou shalt not steal, supported by two statutes. You shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. And that's Leviticus 19:35 and 36, and Deuteronomy 25, verses 13 through 16. Now, our government has encouraged us to throw God and the Ten Commandments out, adopt the Communist Manifesto in its place, throw out property and property rights, and practice an abolition of property so that you can have an equitable interest in everybody else's property. So the government owns everything, and we have this strong central government instead of a limited government. And this strong central government is the entity to which all of the people look for all of their wants, needs, and necessities. So the government becomes God, and then it violates the First and Second Commandments, because then we go after these strange gods, you know, like New York and Washington and Oregon, California. Now, there's a thing here called lawful money. Lawful money. Money which is legal tender in payment of debts. Gold and silver coin at the mint. Okay, now you've got money. You've got money. You have Federal Reserve notes, and you use that as money. But if you would go to the dictionary and look up the word bill and the word note, you'd see that those aren't money. Those are obligations. So what we're using for money are the obligations of the Federal Reserve. So when you use a Federal Reserve note to go down to Harry Connick's to buy the bread and milk, the Federal Reserve becomes the owner of the bread and milk because you use their bills and notes. You didn't pay the debt, you discharged the debt. So if you want to pay a debt, you have to pay it with gold and silver coin. When you pay a debt at law with gold or silver coin, you extinguish the debt and become the owner of the property. So if you wanted to own the bread and milk, you go down to Harry, you give him the lawful money, he gives you his property. It's a property for property transaction, and there's no tax on property. So if you want to know why we're paying a personal property tax, a sales tax, and an income tax, it's because we're dealing with somebody else's property. So in the final analysis, a personal property tax is simply the government charging you rent for the use of their property, which makes all the sense in the world. When you go down and rent an Avis car, you pay them rent for the use of their car. You don't pay Avis a rent for the use of your car. You pay the state a rent for the use of the state's car because you cannot own an automobile in the United States. The title to that car belongs to the state, and that's why you register your car every year. Now, you get to buy it, you get to pay for it, and you get to rent it, but the state gets to own it. And if you don't follow the state's rules and regulations as to the use of their automobile, they'll take it away from you, in the same way that Ronnie Mitchell would take his toys away from you when you went over to play at Ronnie's house in Ronnie's sandbox. So after Ronnie got uppity with me a couple of times and took his toys and kicked me out of his sandbox, I said, to hell with Ronnie Mitchell, and I went over and played with my own toys in my own sandbox. So if you're tired of the phone calls here to the law school that says, I'm from the People's Republic of Michigan, and you need to leave the People's Republic of Michigan and start playing in your own sandbox with your own toys. And to do that, you've got to buy and pay for those. All right, so there's the lawful money story that goes along with commerce and checks. And now, I told you about a C-H-E-C-K. Let me back up over here to chapter 13. Under Social Security, and we'll go over here on page 9, and then there's an interesting little story here. Now, the following are 16 connecting links between the income tax and the civil law and you and your government. You see, you went to public school and you learned how to do a mortgage, Social Security, use Federal Reserve notes, exercise government-granted privileges like taking welfare and food stamps, engage in an equitable interest, like buying an automobile and paying for it on time. You learned how to use bank and corporate credit cards. You learned how to buy and then use stocks and other negotiable instruments, like bonds. You learned how to buy bonds, public business licenses, so that you could be licensed, bonded, and insured. You learned how to use permits. You learned how to use public interest professions, so you went to college so you could get a letter after your name. You learned how to deposit money in the bank and use interest accounts. You learned how to use checks, C-H-E-C-K-S. You learned how to use insurance. You learned how to get a marriage license and become a citizen. So as a citizen of the United States, you're a member. And if you're a member of a union, you have certain duties that you have to pay. Membership requires dues. So as a citizen, you have to pay dues. All right, so again, we have mortgages, Social Security, Federal Reserve notes, government-granted privileges, equitable interest, bank and corporate credit cards. We have stocks and negotiable instruments, bonds, public business licenses, permits, public interest professions, interest accounts, checks, insurance, marriage licenses, and citizenship. Now, you put all that together, and there is the basis of the Roman civil law. That Roman civil law goes back into ancient times to the ancient Assyrians, Egyptians, and Babylonians. It's a pagan religion. It's a religion that comes from the ancient pagans. We were prohibited from practicing that as Hebrews and Israelites. Now, the common law deals in increase, and the civil law deals in income. So the opposite. It's kind of like going to a thesaurus and looking for synonyms. You look for a word, and then it'll give you four or five other words that you could use in its place. Those are called synonyms. Well, the opposite to a synonym is called an antonym, an opposite. So what's the opposite of a mortgage? Well, it's land held in fee simple. What's the opposite of Social Security? It's labor. What's the opposite of a Federal Reserve note? It's called substance. What's the opposite of a government-granted privilege? It's called an inalienable right. What's the opposite of an equitable interest? It's called property. And the opposite of bank and corporate credit cards is gold and silver. And it isn't an accident that these credit card companies call their cards the gold card. It's a deception. It's a lie. It's not gold at all. It's plastic. Plastic. It's not gold. And in number seven, the opposite to stocks and negotiable instruments is private ownership. The opposite to bonds is private property. The opposite to a public business license is a private business. The opposite to a permit is a private right. The opposite to a public interest profession is called a common law occupation. The opposite to an interest-bearing account is called substance and chattels. The opposite to a check, a C-H-E-C-K, is a warehouse receipt or a C-H-E-Q-U-E. The opposite to insurance is individual responsibility. The opposite to marriage licenses is called a patriarchal family. The opposite to citizen or citizenship is called a denizen. Now, the opposite to insurance is called strict liability. Strict liability is individual responsibility. Now, people don't want to be responsible for their actions, and they prefer insurance. I'm not here to tell you that you ought not to have insurance, but I would like to point out that insurance is commerce, and commerce is predicated upon income. So when you're dealing in insurance, you're dealing in commerce. And when you're dealing with a marriage license, you deal in commerce. Citizenship, C-H-E-C-K-S, commerce. In interest-bearing accounts, commerce. Public interest professions, commerce. Permits, public business licenses and bonds, all commerce. Stocks and negotiable instruments are commerce. Bank and corporate credit cards are commerce. Equitable interest, commerce. Government-granted privileges and Federal Reserve notes, Social Security and mortgages are all predicated upon commerce. and in your local community you have a chamber of commerce, and all of your businesses participate in commerce, and commerce comes under Article 1, Section 8 of our federal constitution, and it's regulated, and it's taxed. Now remember, property has never been assessed or taxed. We like to talk about private ownership, private property, private business, and private rights, but we don't practice that. Now the common law deals with increase, which is outside the scope of commerce. And there's no money in that for government, so the government does everything they can to encourage you, to teach you, to train you, to threaten and coerce you into dealing in commerce and not dealing in property. Well, it's a choice that you have to make. And if you want to deal in this thing called commerce, well then get your checkbook out and make sure you pay your income tax. Now, on the other hand, if you deal in land held in fee simple, if you deal in labor, substance, inalienable rights, property, gold and silver, private ownership, private property, private business, private rights, common law occupations, substance and chattels, warehouse receipts and CHEQUES, individual responsibility or strict liability, patriarchal family and denizenship, then you're dealing in the common law, and now you're dealing in property, now you're dealing in tithe, not tax. Now, many of you loathe tithing. You absolutely despise God, and you hate the Ten Commandments and the law of God. The same God, the God of Abraham, says, "Those that hate me love death." I'm not here to preach to you. I'm just here to give you information. So we have a choice to make, and we've made our choice. As Americans, 300 million Americans prefer mortgages over land in fee. We prefer Social Security, the third plank or the third rail of politics. We prefer that to labor. When people say to me, well, I work and my labor is mine. Okay, that's true. You work and your labor is yours. Labor is property. Labor is your property. Now, let me ask you this. Can you give your property away? If you own something, can you give that to somebody? Let's suppose for the sake of our discussion that you have a hula hoop. And you walk over to me and you say, "Well, George, you don't have a hula hoop, and I want to give you my hula hoop." And I say, "Well, Bob, thank you very much. I appreciate you giving me your hula hoop." All right, now I've got the hula hoop. Can you do that? All right, now, a little while later, you come to me and you say, "George, I want my hula hoop back." And I say, Bob, you gave me the hula hoop. The hula hoop now belongs to me. And no, you can't borrow it. You can't use it. I'm going to be a selfish pig and I'm going to keep it all for myself. Can I do that? Boys and girls, when you join Social Security, you pledge all of your labor for all of your life to the Social Security Administration. Now, you have a right to do that. Boys and girls, when you join the Army, you pledge all of your labor for a term of years to the United States Army. Can you do that? You bet you can. Now, once you sign that enlistment contract and they take you into basic training and you say, "Well, I'm not going to do that," you know you're just asking for a lot of trouble and you're going to get it. And then you're going to complain that you're living in the People's Republic of Michigan. But you brought it on yourself. You're the one that signed on. So you military people in Iraq, shut up and stop complaining. Every one of you volunteered. Every one of you National Guard people volunteered. You signed a contract. And the fact that when you signed the contract, you didn't foresee that there would be a war and that you'd be getting shot at and maybe killed is irrelevant and immaterial. You signed up. So for those of you that haven't signed up yet, you might want to consider that. Now, the common law is predicated upon our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, the Ten Commandments, and the Mosaic Law. The civil law and income is predicated upon the Babylonian mystery religion, communism, the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto, and income and the civil law. Now, we Americans have made our choice. And you're certainly welcome to make that choice. In fact, God Almighty Himself insists that you make that choice. And in Deuteronomy 30, He tells you to choose you now, this day. Make up your mind, make your choice. It's kind of like stepping up to the crap table, you know, and the croupier says, get your bets down. Get your bets down. If you want to play in the next round, get your money on the table. Put your money where your mouth is. Now, I mentioned to you yesterday that $8,400 was the filing minimum, and I went through some arithmetic with you. Do you remember that? Now, let's go through this arithmetic again, because we have 2 1-ounce coins. And the newest 1-ounce coin was first minted in 1986. So, from 1986... to 2006, let's see, that's 20 years. We now have had our gold and silver coin back for 20 years. That's a 1-ounce coin, and it has 10-tenths of an ounce of gold in it. 10-tenths of an ounce of gold. There's also a $20 double eagle. The new coins are called eagles. The old coins are called double eagles. And they were minted up through about 1932. From 1907 to 1932, they're called St. Gaudens. And from about 1856, I think it was, through about 1906, they were called coronets. Now, these $20 double eagles actually don't have as much gold as the new ones. They've only got 9-tenths of an ounce of gold. They weigh an ounce, but 1-tenth of it is copper. But those $20 double eagles actually sell for a little bit more than do the new eagles. There's a $17 premium on the coronets and the St. Gaudens. And some of them are actually numismatic, depending upon the quality of the coin. And these numismatic coins carry a tremendous premium. The premium on numismatic coins is about 25%. And the premium on the new eagles is about 4%. So, you know, if you want more gold for your money, then you want to buy the new eagles. If you want less gold for your money, then you might want to buy numismatic coins, old coins. They're called collectibles, collector coins, antique coins. I try to stay away from those, although I am a coin collector and I'm a numismatic buff, and I kind of like to put the coins in the folder, you know, in the slots. And the other day I got a complete set of Walking Liberty half dollars from 1916 to 1947. So to a coin collector, when you have this complete set and you have all of the slots filled, and then maybe you're looking for a little better coin, you know, like an MS-60 is worth more than a VF-20. So you get into this thing of grading, and that's kind of a nightmare, because it's kind of subjective, and what one guy sees and another guy sees as value or grade might not be the same. Now, the Congress of the United States, under Title 31, Section 5102, says that all of the new coins from 1986 on, including the silver dollars or the silver eagles, are numismatic coins. Numismatic, they're collector coins. They also carry the title legal tender coins. And so they're legal tender for all debts, public and private, at face value. But they sell for a premium. So a $50 double eagle, which is worth $50 when you buy, sell, and trade with it according to the official value placed on it by the Congress. It's worth $50. When you go to buy one, yesterday they cost about $630. 630 Federal Reserve Note dollars to buy one of these 1 ounce coins. Now, the reason I mentioned this to you a little bit is because in our business class, we spend quite a bit of time in showing you how to use these gold coins out in the marketplace today to buy, sell, and trade with in order to avoid paying income tax. See, there's no tax on property, and these gold coins are property if they're used correctly. So I'll tell you a little story here. I had a guy come in here one time, and he was an engraver. He's the kind of guy that engraves the plates to make the paper money that you people use. And only this guy was in private business, and as an engraver, he would engrave plates to for a corporation, and this corporation has these machines at the state fair or the county fair, and you put in 50 cents and a penny, and it comes out with the Lord's Prayer, you know, written on a penny. Well, he's the guy that made those dies to do that. He gets paid pretty good money for that. Anyway, he wanted to convert over, so he went to this corporation and he said, I would like you to pay me in gold coin. I don't want you to write me a check and pay me in Federal Reserve notes anymore. I want you to pay me in gold coin. Well, they got a little and they said, no, we're not going to do that. So he said, okay, well, then I'm not going to make any more of these for you. And this guy's a little hard to replace. So they came back and they said, okay, well, we'll pay you in gold coin. Where are we going to get it? And so he said, I want you to get it from this guy over here, but I want a particular kind of gold coin. See, I want $20 double eagles. I do not want you to pay me in the new eagles. Now, there's a very important reason for that, and that's because, remember, the law requires that you file a tax return when you get up to $8,400. $8,400. So, if you were to divide a $20 double eagle into $8,400, you'd get 420 of them. If you divide a $50 eagle into $8,400, you get 168. Well, both of them sell for around $600. 600 Federal Reserve Note dollars. But the difference between the two is that you can get 60% more Federal Reserve notes, or 252,000 Fed notes, for 420 double eagles, as opposed to $100,800 for 168 $50 eagles. Now, when you come to business school, you'll learn how to use those to your advantage. And remember, now you have to comply with all the laws of the United States, including Title 31 and Title 12, along with Title 6, along with the Mosaic Law. So you have to obey the Eighth Commandment in Leviticus 19:35 and 36, and Deuteronomy 25:13 through 16. So now we got to take our break right here at the midway point. And let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website, georgegordon.org, or call us direct, 417-273-4967. All right, let me sign off here. Let me circle off Title 31, Section 5102 through Section 5112, and that'll tell you what the law is concerning these new eagles and their numismatic status. And I suppose at about this time we ought to take a look at... I've got a story here called numismatic, but I'm kind of searching here and I don't see it right in front of me. So since I don't have that, I think I'll save that one until next time. Now let me back up over here and let's take a look at the Social Security story. Remember I told you that Social Security, the third plank, by the way, to politics or of politics, is the connecting link between the income tax and you. Now let me explain to you why that is. Now remember, we're talking about checks this week, but these checks over here have a side effect. And the side effect over here is that it ties you to the income tax. And it makes you commercial man. So if you want to be commercial man, then you need to have a Social Security number. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, if after all, you make a choice in life and you want to have a Social Security number, and you want to participate in the program, and you want to get a job at General Motors or Delphi or somebody, and that's correct. And then somebody comes along and says, yeah, but your labor is your property. But boys and girls, when you got the Social Security number, you gave your labor away. What I'm suggesting is that if you're going to give your labor away for the 108 benefits under Social Security, that's a valid bona fide deal. I don't think it's a very good deal for you. It's a wonderful deal for government. It's a pretty poor deal for you, but then a deal is a deal is a deal, and if you make a bad deal, you're just as bound by that bad deal as if it was a good deal. Contract is a contract is a contract. Your word is your word, and it's either good or it isn't. It's either got a value or it doesn't. Now, the state may require private individuals to obtain a state-created franchise, such as a license to work for the government or to work for any of the government's corporate creations. A corporation, which is a creature of the state, can be compelled to require a prospective employee to possess a Social Security number, which is evidence of a state-created franchise, prior to hiring that applicant. So when you go to work, you go down to McDonald's or you go down to Exxon or Shell or some corporation, Penny's or Sears, and you say, I want a job, they say, well, what's your Social Security number? Now, the corporation has what's known as a taxpayer identification number, and because you have this taxpayer identification number with the corporation, and you want to do business with this corporation, then this corporation is a creature of the state under Hale versus Henkel. And you want to participate in this game. All right, so if you want to participate in the game, you've got to get your Siemens papers, your Social Security number, and then you have to waive your rights under the Bill of Rights, that is your right to property, so that you can go to work in a franchise. And then in this franchise, you can pay your franchise fee, which is called an income tax. Now, a lot of times people want to get a McDonald's franchise. See, they want to use the name McDonald's to sell hamburgers. Now, I could go out here and open up George's Hamburger Stand. But, you know, people don't want to buy George's hamburgers. They want to buy McDonald's hamburgers. Or Burger King hamburgers, or Wendy's hamburgers. They don't want Little Georgie's hamburger. So I wake up one day and say, you know, I'd be better off to go down and buy a franchise from McDonald's so that people who want to buy McDonald's would come and buy their McDonald burger from Little Georgie. And the McDonald's company says, we want 6% of your gross sales. Every day when you ring out your cash register and you've made $10,000 worth of sales, we want you to write us a check for 6%, $600, none of those gross sales. $600. And so you sign that contract. Now suppose for the sake of our discussion over here, you're working along over here, and you don't write that $600 check every day and pay McDonald's. Don't you think they're going to call you on the phone and say, hey, Gordon, where's your franchise fee? And you say, to hell with you, this is my store. I own this. This is my business. And McDonald's sues you. They take you into court and they say, wait a minute, we got a contract here. This guy agreed to pay us our franchise fee of 6%. If we would let him use the name McDonald's. Now, typically, when people make a deal with McDonald's and they sign a contract, they pretty much know and understand the terms and conditions of the contract. Now, most of you people went down and signed up for Social Security, and then you didn't go to Title 42, Section 301 through Section 335. Get that down? Title 42 of the U.S. Code. Now go to Section 301 through 335, 301-335, and read the terms of the contract. Kids, this is what you agreed to when you got that Social Security number. Now, you didn't have to get a Social Security number. There's no law that requires it. You're not going to be punished or jailed without it, but you can't work at McDonald's without it. And most of you people want jobs, jobs, jobs. You don't want a private business. You don't want financial independence. You don't want property. You don't want wealth. You want a job. Well, okay. There's no problem with that. Go get a Social Security number and then go down and get a job. And quit complaining about the government's withholding program. Again, these are choices that we have to make. Now, somebody the other day, I was on a talk show as a guest, and a listener called in, and he talked about his daughter, and he said, my daughter saw the withholding, and she said, well, that's my money that they're taking. They're stealing my money. And the man happened to be this girl's father, and I pointed out, sir, she agreed to that withholding. And in fact, sir, you could not make that withholding from her without her signed agreement called the W-4 form. You know, you people go out here and you sign your name and you make these agreements, you make these contracts, you never read the terms and conditions of the contract, and then you bitch like hell because somebody is out here exercising the terms and conditions of the contract that you don't know anything about, and then you're claiming, well, they can't do that because I don't know about that. Well, you don't have to know about the terms and conditions. I mean, you don't have to read the contract to sign it. It's not very good business. It's not very wise. I've always told my students, don't ever sign your name unless you've read the terms and conditions and you're fully persuaded that you want to make the sacrifice, because every time you sign your name, you impair your liberty to some degree. Every time you sign your name, you're impairing your liberty. And somebody is offering you something if you will impair your liberty. I'm not really sure that my liberty is for sale. You know, I'm pretty cautious about signing my name. I can't remember the last time I signed my name. And when somebody says to me, sign here, you know, it's like a big red flag comes right up in front of my face. And I, wait, stop. What do you mean, sign my name? Sign it for what reason? Why would I want to sign? Well, so that you can get this, that, or something else. I've got to tell you a story. I wanted to buy one of these containers, you know, that they ship stuff from on ships. They're 40-foot containers. And there's a man over here that's got four or five of them that he's bought over the years. And I looked at him. I said, gee, those are really neat. How much are they? And he said, well, they're about $3,000. $3,000 Federal Reserve Note dollars. So I said, well, that sounds pretty good. They're 8 feet by 40 feet by 8 feet high. And I worked it out, and it's a little less than $10 a square foot. And I bought some little storage buildings from a local building material company here, and they were about $10 a square foot. And I said, well, and look at this. They're made out of steel, and you can just set them right on railroad ties, and they're just kind of real neat. And I said, well, I'd like to get one of those. So I said, hey, Derek, get on the web and see if there's a company. Come to find out, there's two of them. So we got to talking to these people, and there's this company over in St. Louis. They're out of Los Angeles, but they got containers in St. Louis. And I talked to this real nice salesman, and he sold me a container. And then I talked to this real nice lady, and she said that she was going to send me the paperwork. I said, terrific. And so they sent the paperwork, and it was four sheets of paper on the fax. And one of the pieces of paper was very fine print. Very fine print. So I got my 10 power loop, you know, my 10 power contract reading glasses, and I read all of the terms and conditions of the contract. And when I got to the bottom of that page, I mulled that over through my computer, my brain, and then I said, this is totally unacceptable. So I wrote totally unacceptable at the top of the page. Then I went on to the second, third, and fourth pages. Now, they had an invoice there with an invoice number on it and said, sign this. You had to sign all four of these pieces of paper now. I'm going to sign my name four times here. So it had some restrictions on it, on the invoice, and I said, well, I think I can live with those restrictions. I think that I'll impair my liberty to this degree, and so I signed that one. And then I read the next page, and I said, okay, I think I'll go ahead and impair my liberty to this degree so that I can get this container, and I signed that one. And then I got to this third page, and I said, yeah, this one over here, I think I can live with that, and so I signed that third one. Now, I impaired my liberty three times with this company, but not four times, just three times out of four. And then I called them back on the phone, and I said, now, I don't want credit. And the primary purpose for this real fine print deals with credit cards, your bank, and wire transfers, and all kinds of interrelated bank services. And I said, here's the way I want to pay for this. I'm going to give you 30 $100 Federal Reserve notes and one $50 Federal Reserve note. That's $3,050, which is the delivered price. I'm going to pay you cash, and then I want your driver to sign that, paid in full, and then that's the way we'll do this deal. Just do a cash transaction. And we won't need any credit cards or anything like that. But I said, just in case you're concerned that maybe I couldn't handle a whole $3,000 transaction, let me send you references, three references with three other businessmen who have done business with me in the past making cash transactions of $3,000, and let me see whether or not, you know, I can convince you that I can handle a great big deal like that. And so I sent it off, and she said, yeah, I think we can. And so we talked back and forth, and pretty soon I got a call and said, nope, we got to have that fourth contract signed. And I said, but you know, that's totally unacceptable. Totally unacceptable. In fact, I said, only a moron would sign that. Well, only a moron or some kid been to public school and can't read would sign that. So I declined. I said, no, I don't think I want to sign that, but if you'd like to sell that container, I'd like to buy it, and I'd like to buy it and pay cash, and I'd like to pay COD, and if you can deliver it, well, you get after it. And so they didn't call back, so I called them back, and they said, if there's no fourth page, there's no deal. So I said, okay. Well, they canceled my order, and then I sent them an email, a confirmation canceling my order so that I get that in space. And I called their competitor, and I said, I just tried to buy one of these containers from your competitor over here in St. Louis, and they can't handle a cash transaction. They can't handle a deal for $3,000 in $100 bills. So before we get any further into this, can you do that? Oh, you betcha we can handle a $3,000. I said, now, I don't want any credit, and I don't have any credit cards, and I don't have any credit. I'm a deadbeat, and I don't pay my bills, and you can't trust me, and my checks aren't any good. I just want to pay you with $100 bills. Now, are you sure you can handle a deal like that? Oh, you betcha, sir. Yeah, we can handle a deal like that. I said, oh, terrific. Terrific. So I want to point out to you that, boys and girls, here in America, there are some companies that can't handle transactions in cash. They've got to have credit cards, checks, some kind of commercial paper. And then there are some companies that can handle cash transactions and cash deals. So I just thought I'd pass that on. Now, I've been in the business world since 1950. Remember, that's when I started my paper route. From 1950 to 2006, I have never been unable to make a cash transaction until this week when I tried to buy that 40-foot container. And they couldn't handle cash. They had to handle it through contract. Now, here's my point. My liberty is pretty important, and I can read and write, and I can even understand what I read. I'm a very unusual American. I can read, I can write, I can understand what I read. And I read the contract and I said, now that's totally unacceptable. That's something that a moron would sign or an illiterate might sign, but not me. So it was very inconvenient because I wanted that container and I wanted it yesterday. If I would have wanted it today, I would have ordered it today. And that's why I ordered it yesterday, because I wanted it yesterday. But, you know, I'm not prepared to sign away my life, my liberty, and my property to some corporate entity over here so that I can have convenience. So I had to call another guy and say, well, you know, our deal over here is going to have to be postponed because I don't have a place to put this stuff. So I'm going to go call this other company. Now, this other company said they could handle the deal. And sometimes you have to tell people no, N-O. You know, it's like, no, I don't smoke. No, I don't drink. No, I don't do drugs. And no, I don't lay on my back. Okay. So now you've got that little piece of the puzzle. The corporation, which is a creature of the state, can be compelled to require a prospective employee to possess a social security number, which is evidence of a state-created franchise. That social security number is evidence of a state-created franchise or privilege, not a right, a privilege. So when you're working with a social security number, boys and girls, you're not dealing in property, you're dealing in franchise, and a franchise is a privilege. Now, I want to point out that the income tax is a franchise tax. Did you know that? That's right, it's a franchise tax. It's a privilege tax. It's a privilege to work for General Motors. It's a right to work for yourself. It's a privilege to work as an employee. Now, if you want to be an employee, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success, because there are people that want to be soldiers. There are people that want to be bond servants, or people that want to be slaves, or people that, you know, there's various statuses of people out here. It's called status. And there are 16 of these statuses, 16 status that you could achieve, such as an individual, I'll give them to you, individual, a free person, a married woman, an Indian not taxed, or a free person bound to service for a term of years. There's the first five. Or you could be a citizen, subject, person, or an employee. That's the next four. Or you could be an Indian taxed people, 3/5 of all other persons, or 2/5 of all other persons. Or you could be a member, officer, or an agent. Or you could be a corporation, a trust, or a foundation. Or you could be a servant, a soldier, a bondservant, a slave, or a convict. Now, there's 24 statuses of person. In India, you call those castes. In America, we call them status. And there's 24 of them. And you can be any one of those that you want, or you can be two or three in combination if you so desire. Now, an individual is at the top, and a convict is at the bottom. And everybody else is in between. Number 23 is a slave. Even a slave has more rights than a convict. A bondservant has more rights, privileges, and immunities than a slave. A soldier has more rights, benefits, and immunities than a convict, slave, or a bondservant. And a servant is higher than a soldier, bondservant, slave, or a convict. Now, the bottom of the rung over here, boys and girls, is called a servant, a soldier, a bondservant, a slave, or a convict. Soldiers are number 21. Soldiers are not very high in the caste system of America. Not in American politics. Now, a married woman is number 3, an Indian not taxed is number 4, and a free person bound to service for a term of years is number 5. So if you want to be in the top 5, you want to be an individual, a free person, a married woman, an Indian not taxed, or a free person bound to service for a term of years. You know, somebody that signs agreements, contracts, mortgages, you may want to be a free person bound to service for a term of years. And when this was proposed to me the other day to buy a container, that I should be a free person bound to service for a term, I said, no, I don't want to do that. I just want to buy and pay for the damn thing and own it. I want that to be property. I want to buy and pay for that thing. So I offered to pay them in gold coin. Now, they told me right off the bat that they didn't deal in gold coin. Okay. That they preferred that I write a check after I had had my credit cleared. Well, boys and girls, I don't have any credit. And sometimes people ask me, well, Mr. Gordon, why don't you have credit? And it's because I'm a deadbeat. A deadbeat. Nobody in his right mind would loan me any money, loan me anything. My credit's no good. But then I don't need credit. I've got money. People with money don't need credit. People who need credit don't have money. Does that make sense? People with money don't need credit, and people with credit need money. Or people that have credit borrow money because they don't have money. All right, so now tuck that one away in your heart. That's called status. Now, next time when we come back, we're going to take a look at this thing of numismatic coins. I wanted to explain that to you. And we'll start right off with those numismatic coins. And then I'm going to take a look here in the final analysis of the Norwest Bank versus American Life and Casualty Company, a 1996 case in which a bank in Iowa is being paid in gold coin by an insurance company today in 2006. They're being paid today in gold coin. I'll show you that next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. All right, let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. All right, our time's up. We got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.